Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, April 15th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing. Addy Elliott Jr. joining me is LaCroix Poppy, Tim Gettys.
In the Bay Area, we call this 415 Day. It's a big deal. Okay.
Oh, it is 415 Day.
The area code of the Bay Area.
How do you celebrate?
Just be cool people. Hang out with cool people. Do cool things.
You don't get hyphy like you people be doing over here?
We be doing that on the daily. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Go dumb. Go stupid. That whole thing. That whole thing. We really were out here for an entire generation just yelling, go dumb, go stupid.
But like, I'll be honest, stupid. As somebody who didn't grow up in this area, that shit goes hard.
It does.
When y'all are over here talking about like, go dumb, go stupid, and you're shaking your dreads they don't got. Like, I'm over here in the Midwest.
I'm growing some, though.
I'm in the Midwest looking over like, man, all we got is common.
You had common, though, dude.
We had common.
Like, you had an era, dude. There was a common. There was, you know, the old times of
Kanye.
He who not be named.
There was Lupe Fiasco.
Y'all had some good shit going on.
But it was like, the problem with the Midwest, specifically Illinois, Chicago, I'm not from Chicago, but I'm from Illinois, is that all of our rappers were either the smartest people alive or the most gangster, like, motherfuckers that'll kill you and shoot
you on
the
spot. We just had a bunch of people that just want to have fun and make up words. That was really all that it was,
and I wish there was a bit more of that in the Midwest. Like, half of our rappers went to college.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the other half are like our Bobby Shmurda. And they will ride or fucking die. I think Bobby, actually, correct me on that. I'm not even sure if I got that right. That's Bobby Shmurda or Chief Keef, I think, is from
Bobby Shmurda.
Now I have to look it up.
Oh.
No, he's from
God.
New York. He's from New York.
Yeah.
Where's Chief Keef from?
That is a great question, everybody. Where is Chief Keef from?
Chief Keef. Chicago. Here we go. Yeah. Chief Keef is who I meant. Chief Keef. Anyway, Tim, how's your weekend? How's it going?
It was good. It was real good. Watched only one more episode of Fallout, so I'm two in, which makes me sad because I wish I had more time to watch it all. But also, it's all good, man, because I'm enjoying that. It's also rough. We're doing a Mad Max in review right now. Everybody can check out episode one already, episode two later this week. So I have to watch that week to week. And watching Mad Max and Fallout back to back is a lot.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
A lot of similarities there. So that's kind of fun, and especially because we're watching the old movies. So I watched a movie from, like, 1972 or whatever the hell it was. Mm-hmm. That's not right. 1981 or some shit next to Fallout. I'm like, oh, man.
Here's the thing that upsets me, right? There are multiple people in chat being like, who the fuck is Chief Keef? And also somebody else is like, y'all be making up rappers, I swear.
Yeah.
I get it a lot of times. Like, there was one time on the show last week where I asked what a calling card is, and people were like, oh, he's so young. Oh, he's so young. I don't know how fucking old you have to be to not know who Chief Keef is.
Chief Keef, I mean, yeah, that was like...
You gotta be old to not know Chief Keef. Get it together, chat.
Figure your life out.
Find some culture.
Young. Think about it that way, Bless. There's probably a whole entire generation now
that doesn't know Chief Keef?
Yeah.
That's that shit I don't like, Tim. Here we go. Enough about all that. Let's talk about today's stories, which include new details on the PS5 Pro, an Invincible game is coming, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about live on YouTube, Twitch, and on podcast services around the globe. If you love what we do, support us with the Kinda Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us record them live, and get a daily exclusive show. For a chance to be a part of the show, submit your thoughts and opinions as YouTube Super Chats as we go. Housekeeping for you, in case you missed it. A new episode of Game Showdown is up right now, featuring six contestants, three teams, contestants including Lucy James, Callie Pleggy, Zalavir Nelson, and more. Go check that out over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And thank you to our Patreon producers, Carl Jacobs, Kieran Hovasapien, Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Factor, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have seven stories today.
A baker's dozen.
A lot of stories.
Starting, it is a lot of stories. This is a big day.
Big day, everybody.
Starting with our number one. Sony's PS5 Pro is real and developers are getting ready for it. This is Tom Warren at The Verge. Sony is getting ready to release a more powerful PS5 console, possibly by the end of the year. After reports of leaked PS5 Pro specifications surfaced recently, The Verge has obtained a full list of specs for the upcoming console. Wow. Sources familiar with Sony's plans tell me that developers are already being asked to ensure their games are compatible with this upcoming console, with a focus on improved ray tracing.
What's the codename for it, though, Bless?
Codenamed Trinity.
Badass. ass.
Which is how you know it's real. Because if there's one thing PlayStation loves to do, it's codenaming their consoles after Matrix characters.
Dope ass shit. Got Neo. Yeah, Neo. Morpheus.
Morpheus was?
VR.
VR.
I want to say.
I think that was VR1.
Maybe it was VR1. Yeah. I'm an old man. No, that's how that works.
Codenamed Trinity. Wow.
Sick as hell.
The PlayStation 5.
Meanwhile, Nintendo's like Dolphin. And then.
Yeah.
Revolution. But the Wii was the revolution.
But then the Switch was NX. Yeah. Well, I guess NX is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool.
What was
Wii U? We talked about that for a long time. A mistake.
Dolphin U? Revolution U?
The Revolution again. I don't know.
Codename Trinity, the PS5 Pro model will include a more powerful GPU and a slightly faster CPU mode. All of Sony's changes point to a PS5 Pro that will be far more capable of rendering games with ray tracing enabled or hitting higher resolutions and frame rates in certain titles. Sony appears to be encouraging developers to use graphics features like ray tracing more with the PS5 Pro, with games able to use a, quote, Trinity enhanced, a PS5 Pro enhanced label if they provide significant enhancements.
The Wii U was Project Cafe. The chat.
They knew that shit was whack. They called it Project Cafe. They're like, this shit is doomed from the start. You went from Revolution to Cafe. I guess they went from Dolphin to Revolution.
Yeah.
They were cooking during the Wii U.
They were cooking, man.
And then, like, you got deeper into the console lifespan, and they're like, all right, let's stop.
Let's figure this out. Yeah. Move on.
Sony expects GPU rendering on the PS5 Pro to be about 45% faster than standard PS5, according to documents outlining the upcoming console. The PS5 Pro GPU will be larger and use faster system memory to help improve ray tracing in games. Sony is also using a, quote, more powerful ray tracing architecture in the PS5 Pro, where the speed here is up to 3 times better than the regular PS5. Quote, Trinity is a high-end version of PlayStation 5, reads one document, with Sony indicating it will continue to sell the standard PS5 after this new model launches. Sony is expecting game developers to have a single package that will support both the PS4 and PS5 Pro consoles, with existing games able to be patched for higher performance. I understand developers are able to order test kits right now, and that Sony is expecting every game submitted to certification in August to be compatible with the PS5 Pro. Insider Gaming first reported the full PS5 Pro specs and indicated the console was set to release during the 2024 holiday period. This article then goes on to give more details about the specs of the PS5 Pro, but then goes on to mention this. The increase in memory, speed, and allocations may be useful for Sony's new PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution (PSSR) support. This is essentially Sony's upscaling answer to NVIDIA's DLSS or AMD's FSR to improve frame rates and image quality on PlayStation. Sony has built a custom architecture for machine learning on the PS5 Pro, which supports 300 TOPS of 8-bit computation. There's even more in the article where I left out all like the nitty-gritty details that we don't necessarily need to get into because there's a lot of numbers and a lot of terms that I don't know that you probably know better
than
I do.
Some of them were cool, though. Some of them were just like, all right, cool. We're just like talking about percentages that really, what does that actually mean? But some of it, I was like, all right, they're legitimately talking about this PSSR thing, their super resolution system, to be able to get 1080p up to 4K pretty easily, and to get 4K to get up to 8K with a little bit more of the memory being used there. And they're talking about actually applying the percentages to those numbers in a way that I was like, this is real, and this like this means something to me of like understanding like how the games work, and especially now being familiar with DLSS and seeing what the NVIDIA side of it can do, at least, and honestly how spectacular that stuff does work for games. It's magic in a lot of ways. It is such a wow factor to see them be able to make run games smoother at higher resolution, seemingly, which at the end of the day is all that really matters to people playing games, so they care about the visuals at least. So all that's great. Does this go back to the same thing of, do we really need this? Are there games? Of course it always does. My biggest question is, what's the price? What is this going to come out and look like? Is it going to kind of take the PS5's price point and drop the PS5 normals down? Or is this thing coming in as like a premium luxury item, which would be an interesting placement in the market now?
Yeah. Why so?
I mean, just because what would that number be, right? Like, like, are we getting to a point that they're going to be offering game consoles at a 600 plus range again? You know, like the PS3 did that back in the day, and that was kind of a major misstep for it. Different time, different era, money meant something a little different then. We are in the age now where cell phones are annual devices that their prices really kind of like, it used to be super high, came down, and it's now just been kind of going up, up, up. Like, I feel like every year, phones have just been more expensive than the one prior. for the most part in like the last, like, once everything really shifted to like OLED being a standard and moving on, like, for what the advancements actually are, mm-hmm. When it comes to phone tech, I feel like consoles are in a similar place, but we just haven't seen people readily put down that type of cash for a game console, and I don't know that the world's necessarily ready for that.
Yeah, I wonder where their heads are at right now in the context of what we know about PlayStation 5 sales and current gen console sales at this point, right? Like, they've talked about the PS5 sales not hitting the expectations, right? Like, obviously it's doing good when you look at the numbers overall, but the pace of it feels like it's slowing down. They talk about it slowing down. I wonder, with the PS5 Pro, is this going to be the move to bring that back up until we're at the PlayStation 6 and now we're ready to make this big wave again? Or is it like, does pricing it and positioning it as a luxury item, we are going for the hardcore here. We are going for a much smaller audience, but we're going to charge them a lot of money because they're going to get the ultimate performance out of this thing. I wonder if that's more so the strategy here, because I think the timing is also interesting, both with where we're at in terms of the dip of sales, but then also where we're at right before GTA 6 coming out. And I think GTA 6 is going to be a big factor in how this Pro console is going to play out, right? Because, like, you got to imagine that Sony is on the doors of Rockstar being like, hey, can we please market this with PS5 mm-hmm. Pro enhanced on it? Like, this has to be a marketing point. I'm sure Rockstar is like, well, yeah, we want to make the best looking game totally. Possible. We want to make the most technically advanced thing possible. Yeah, let's make this happen. How many PS5 Pros can you sell off of the success of a GTA 6, let alone, like, by that time we get to next year, you're hoping that we get more first-party PlayStation games, right? We're kind of in a down year now. It's big hope, right? But, like, if by next year we could get a Ghost of Tsushima 2, or we could get even announcements of, hey, Koi Barlog's next game is finally announced. Probably not going to be next year, but, hey, if we can get that in front of people,
next year, I don't think is out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. I think by next year, right? Especially when we're talking about a game like Death Stranding 2, you can line these things up where right now, once we get to this fall, I think people are going to be like, do I really need this? If you're able to make the argument of, hey, 2025, 2026, 2027, you're going to want a fucking PS5 Pro. Like, trust us. Like, these are the games that are coming. I am so fascinated to see if they're able to play that card and if they're able to sell, let's say, a $600 or even a $700 PlayStation 5 Pro with that.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the thing, is, like, to answer your question of, like, do I think that they're going to go the route of pushing this as an enthusiast thing? I do not. I think that this is them. They'll put it out, and I think that they're just going to dig their heels in of, like, this is just another PS5 SKU, and if you want it, you should get this one, and if you're a new PS5 owner, you should probably get this one, and they're going to have some marketing thing to be able to sell that. For a long time, I've been questioning, what is the PS5 Pro's kind of little, like, keywords they put on the box or put in the commercials to, like, sell it? It's going to be this PSSR thing. Mm-hmm. And how do you turn that into
something interesting
that people can understand? And I feel like it's easy enough to just show some, like, before and after type things of, like, this is how things used to be. Now this is how they look. And, like, that sells it in a way that PS4 Pro had HDR, which was the big thing it was pushing, which is now more of, like, a standard feature in big games. So, and with all the next gen consoles as well. So I kind of see them putting it in a similar place as they did the PS4 Pro, which is why the pricing of it, I think, is the thing I'm most interested in, where the number, what they're talking about here, is, sounds like an expensive box.
Yeah.
But I just don't see them putting something out for $700. I just don't
see $700 does seem like a step way too far. Yeah. I don't know if you're going to, I think it would be smarter to go, even $600 feels like too much, but I could see them doing that. That just seems a lot more feasible, especially if you're keeping the current PlayStation 5 SKUs that we have. Because this is, like, correct me if I'm wrong, right? PS5 with the disc, $500, and then PlayStation 5 without the disc, $450. Is that correct, Tim?
That sounds right.
Yeah. And so, like, if you're going for $600 with this Pro thing, I think that becomes, I think that's an understandable price, is based off of how much of a jump this sounds like from the PS5, from the base PS5 models. My other question, though, is how big is this thing going to be? Because the PS5 currently is already humongous.
I mean, think about the PS4, right?
Yeah, PS4, they added in another fucking layer.
They added a whole ass layer to the PS4 Pro. And yeah, with the PS5, and now they have the Slim. I mean, it's following the same kind of cadence that PS4 did. Right, yeah. Of, like, we'll put out the Slim model, and then we'll put out the beefy boy, the Pro, and add a layer. I am interested in what that thing could look like. I'm interested, does it have a disc drive or not?
I don't think it's going to have a disc drive. I think that might be the difference between it coming in at $600 or $650 or $700. Right?
My gut says $600. yeah. with this, and I don't think that that's unreasonable for what they're talking about here, especially if they do keep the PS5 at 500, which I think that they will for a while. Like, I don't think that thing's getting a price drop. Like, I don't think this comes in and moves everything down.
I'm surprised. See, I would think... I'm trying to think if this comes in and eliminates one of the other models. Because when we talk about the disc version and the discless version, I keep forgetting that we have, yeah, like the new PS5 or the PS5 Slim model.
Yeah.
Does this come in and eliminate, I guess, the disc model? Or does it eliminate any of the other models, do you think?
It's a good question. I would imagine, well, I don't think, do they still sell the normal PS5? Like, I feel like they're still out there
with
in the
discs,
wild.
For sure. I think.
Why would they, though? Because the Slim is just the new PS5, and the Slim you can get disc or not disc. Because there's the attachment.
Oh, you're right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I don't think that they sell the OG PS5 anymore, like as a new product themselves, mm-hmm. unless it's just stock that they're getting rid of.
Yeah. The at least from them directly, you can only get the new model. Yeah, I imagine they're still available, like if you go
of course.
To like Walmart or something.
Okay, then I take that back. Yeah, then I don't think they're going to discontinue.
These guys.
I wouldn't think they would discontinue either of these guys. No. I was thinking about the base one because I forgot that they made a disc version of the new PS5 model. Yeah, that was the whole thing, is that was a detachable disc drive. So yeah.
Yeah.
My other question here, I guess more of an activity, is I want you to pitch the rollout of this to me. When do they announce it? How do they announce it? Do they announce it with software? Is it part of a state of play? Is it part of a PlayStation showcase?
I mean,
do we get it?
I think that what I would do and what they're going to do are kind of different things. But what I would do, I feel like, is it's impossible because they don't have any games coming this year. So it's like they already don't have the chance to have like a perfect plan of the synergy of like we're launching this thing. If I remember, the PS4 Pro was heavily marketed with Horizon Zero Dawn. Mm-hmm. And they might not have come out exactly at the same time, but they were around each other. And they were really pushing the HDR and all that. I think that this is not so much a random Tuesday blog announcement, but if they do have a state of play, I think it'll be similar to how they announced the headphones and the earphones, and like it's just like the
was
hardware.
That part of state of
a
play?
State of play, just like a small little commercial or something, and then more details to come just like immediately after in a blog post. Like, I don't think it's going to be like nothing, but I don't think they're going to make the biggest deal in the world about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a hard thing to kind of like, I feel like their marketing is going to be the holiday season for this thing.
Do we think that, because there's been rumblings of that Astrobot game possibly being this year, and I feel like there's been this cadence now that Astrobot is used to show off like new
hardware.
Like hardware,
that'd be fire
for console stuff.
Yeah, I don't think so, because I don't see them pushing Astro as like this type of showing things off. Like, I feel like this needs like a Death Stranding, you know. Like when me and Andy went to go see the DLS demo for the first time a couple years back, they showed us Death Stranding and the difference that it made in Death Stranding to the grass in that game and just like the world of it, and I feel like that made us go like, oh my god.
Yeah,
so Death Stranding 2 is a possibility for them to match up with.
I'm fascinated because if the streets are saying, and by the streets, I mean the reports and leaks, the streets are saying that it's seemingly coming by the end of the year, and yeah, like the rest of this year for PlayStation is looking kind of light. I don't think for a pro console you need to have a killer app, mm-mm. right? I think you're fine if you have a fall full of games, like third-party things that are coming, and then you sell more when you get Death Stranding 2 next year, yep. and you get GTA 6, and you get exclusives and all this stuff. I'm opening up Blessing Super Fun Game Release Calendar, which I released a new version of last week. If you go check my Twitter.
Check that out. And yeah, I'm with you. I don't see them releasing it necessarily alongside a game. And
this fall
is
looking light is my thing, though.
And the thing there, though,
like
is
period.
That's fine, though, because they have their old games that they can just, what's old is new again, of just like, hey, these games are now PS5 Pro enhanced, and I bet we're going to get a ton of that, right?
I think that's how they come out the gate marketing it. I think they make a bit more of a deal out of it than like a blog post. If I remember for the PS4 Pro, didn't they have like an event that people came out to, and I feel like it was like a stage show or something. I thought they did like a specific, hey, like come out and watch us talk about this on stage. This is another you're wrong situation.
I remember it being tied to Horizon Zero Dawn, so okay. I feel like it might have just been during the
like
a state of play back then or whatever.
And that makes sense, because I was just looking up because I was curious as well. The PS4 Pro came out November 2016, and then I guess Horizon probably was going to be just the next big PlayStation Studios game at that point. So that makes sense.
So yeah, it was somewhere around there. And what was interesting too is I remember that was the Xbox. What was it? Xbox One S was the first thing with HDR, and that was at the E3 earlier. And that was kind of their first big push into mid console generations as well. And we also have Xbox this year potentially doing something.
I think I still see it as either it shows up in a state of play or it shows up in a showcase. I don't know if they announce it. That's the thing is, if it's coming out in, let's say, November, I don't think you announce it during the summer. I think you announce it in like August or something.
Yeah, August sounds right.
So maybe it's a Gamescom thing. Maybe you roll it out during opening Gamescom Night Live. That would make a lot of
sense. That's probably it.
Yeah, come out during opening Night Live. Code. And I think
in
that trailer or in that reveal, I think you are doing a lot of before and afters. I think you're picking, okay, what are the most visually appealing / most popular games in the PS5 generation so far? I think you go with God of War Ragnarok, you go with Spider-Man 2, and then maybe either like a Returnal or a Ratchet or something, and then you show the, hey, this is what this game looked like already. It's beautiful, right? And then you show the PS5 Pro version. You're like, I mean, this is what it looks like now, and I think that becomes marketing.
It's so hard, though, because I think that the marketing there is, it's the before and after needs storytelling for it to make sense, because it's like, we're just at a point now that we're talking about tech that just looking at it in a compressed video streaming on stuff, it's like you kind of just need to believe what they're saying. But this was a problem with the PS4 Pro as well, with the HDR thing of like when they were first showing that, most people's TVs did not have HDR, period.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of the matter is probably these days there's a percentage of people that do not have HDR in their TVs, even if they have a PS5.
Yeah.
Or any type of PS5. So that it's going to be hard for them to accurately show, and I don't think that we're all going to look at it and be like, oh man, I was wrong, I needed this thing. But I think the people that are like, oh, I understand what this stuff means, and like, hey, it gets me excited enough to want one, I'm in that boat for sure. But I like new tech, I like my games looking as good as they can, and I care about that stuff.
I think they're, you talk about, you know, them marketing this to the, or actually I think you talk more so about like, I think they're going to go beyond the hardcore, right? And like, I think to do that, you have to make those bullet points matter. Even if it is PSSR, which means nothing to most people. Even DLSS, which is a thing that we talk about all the time on the show, right? Like, that doesn't mean anything to so many people. How are you conveying that, right? Like, PSSR, do you put 8K on there? Do you put, like, improved ray tracing? Like, I think that stuff only goes so far. Before and afters, I think do a job, but you're right that if you don't have the right TV or if you're watching that on a stream, how much is that really conveyed? I think they're going to have to like do something to nail that down though. Otherwise, yeah, I think a vast majority of people are going to look at that and go, all right, cool.
Yeah.
I'm just going to play my PS5 though.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I'm going to get into here. Tim?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move on to story number 2. But before we do, I want to tell you about patreon.com/kindoffunny and youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the Kind of Funny membership, which allows you to get shows ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Factor. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. A ton of us here at Kind of Funny have been so thankful for Factor since we've been in the new studio, and you can too. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Head to factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 and use code kindoffunny50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code kindoffunny50 at factormeals.com/kindoffunny50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And we're back. And we've welcomed to the stage the Lock, Roger Bricorni. Raj,
I just appear.
Welcome to the show. What's
Thank
up,
you
man?
So much. Why am I here?
You're here because you've played Harold Halibut.
I did?
You did.
Oh my God.
I think we messed up. We shouldn't have booked you.
Oh my gosh.
Story number 2 is the Harold Halibut review roundup for you. Right now, Metacritic is sitting at a 76. On OpenCritic, is sitting at a 78. before I even get into the review roundup, I'm sure plenty of people are like, what in the world is Harold Halibut?
Myself included.
Yeah, Roger, what is Harold Halibut?
Yeah, Harold Halibut is a game that you've probably heard of maybe 10 years ago because it has been in development for a very long time. The whole crux of it is it's a handcrafted video game, right? So all of this that you're seeing is handcrafted in an actual claymation, but you know, miniature stop motion type deal. And they scan in all of the backgrounds, all the characters, like everything you're seeing right there. If you're a video watcher, you should definitely watch it. It is all handcrafted and they scanned it in and they made it into a video game. So this took a very long time to actually come to fruition. It's kind of wild that 10 years, it's finally here.
Yeah. It's one of those ones that, has been making the rounds online. And, like, you see it and you're like, oh, what in the world is this? This looks cool, but it's taking forever to come out.
Yeah.
And I think I got reintroduced to it through Steam Next Fest.
Yeah.
And it's been making the waves in the last few months of people talking about
it.
The
demo, I think, is still out, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. But right now, it is sitting on Metacritic at a 76 and on OpenCritic at a 78. Tristan Ogilvy at IGN gave it an 8 out of 10 and says, it may take place at the bottom of the ocean on a distant alien planet, but Harold Halibut's story is an entirely human one, both in terms of its carefully handmade environments and its strong emphasis on empathy towards its eccentric cast of characters. While I wish that there was a little more interactivity to be found throughout its subaquatic setting and Harold's shuffling run could have been boosted to a sprint to reduce that time spent repeatedly schlepping from one end of his levels to the other, I nonetheless remained captivated by his whimsical quest to unite his community and explore the spectacular surroundings of his sunken home. Consistently funny and full of surprises, Harold Halibut is a wholesome, handcrafted adventure with plenty of heart. Chris Tapsell at Eurogamer gave it 3 out of 5 stars and called it a visually arresting, warm-hearted tale of a gopher searching for his purpose. It's gopher with an F, which I had to Google. It's not the animal. A gopher is like...
Golf.
No.
Right?
A gopher is a person who runs errands, especially on a movie set or in an office.
Don't they call the golf people gophers as well?
Golfers.
I'm with Timmy here. What are you talking about?
The guys that go get the balls.
No, yeah,
like the caddies.
Yeah, the guy.
There's also gophers on the golf course. You know, the animals.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking about that. Oh, caddies.
It's a whole team game here.
Who knew?
Anyway. A visually arresting, warm-hearted tale of a gopher searching for his purpose. Harold Halibut, it's Eurogamer, so they're using all those Euro words. Harold Halibut flounders amongst endless fetch quests and waffle. And then Giovanni Colantonio at Digital Trends gave it 3 stars and says, though Harold Halibut leaves me with a lot to pick at, it's a fitting debut for what's sure to become one of gaming's most exciting new studios. Like Harold himself, Slow Bros finds itself pushing gaming's mundane comfort zone into the stratosphere with an approach that few will dare to replicate. It's a bold risk. I'm sure the studio could have made a lot of commercially viable games in the last 14 years it took to put this together, but why settle for stagnation? Roger?
Yeah.
How'd the game hit for you?
I very up and down, right? That's the way that I would describe my experience, right? So I would give this game a 3 out of 5. It's okay on the kind of funny scale. I had a weird experience where I played the first 2 chapters of the game, which is, it's not proportional. There's 6 chapters in the game. So like the first 2 chapters, like 4 hours of the game, a big chunk of the game. And I was like, man, I don't get it. I don't get where this is going. It is a lot of fetch quests. You are literally running from one place to another to then quote unquote fast travel to another place and then do another fast. Like it is just, you're talking to a person and then they say, hey, pick up the thing, go to do the thing. And I was like, what are the hooks? Like, where's the story taking me here? Mm-hmm. Then chapter 3 takes a turn, which you can see in the trailer. I won't say it out loud because it's wild. And if you don't have any idea of what this game is, like you should go in as blind as possible, but something crazy happens and then it takes you into this wild place. And I'm like, oh, okay, we're going somewhere. Yeah. We're doing something. But after that, my third play session in the game, which I finished it and I completed it, I was like, man, it just did not come together. It went to that crazy place, but it was not able to consistently get there. And I think the biggest thing when it comes to the story is the game loves to focus on the mundane, right? And I think to its detriment, at least for me, right? And I think it's a taste thing. But for me, it's like, okay, we have all this crazy shit around us, but the game is very focused on, hey, let's focus on the smaller parts of it. Let's focus on this little, you know, corner of it, not the crazy thing that's happening right in front of you. There's not a lot of like a lot of things that like are set up in this game that are like clearly happen that are like wild, like, oh my gosh, like this would be a bombastic moment in a video game that we would like look at and we'd be like, okay, well, we need to like break this down.
Yeah.
In this game, they're like, that just happens. Like it happens and then we're done with it. And then we move on to like the other the meat of the game, which is just us talking about, you know, very small, intricate details of like, okay, well, this thing happened. Okay, cool. It is not focus in on like the big moments that a normal game would. And that's okay. And I think that that is going to work for a lot of people. For me, it did not work. Yeah. It was just like, I wanted to have that completion of, okay, well, this insane thing happened. Let's actually talk about it. Let's actually go down this rabbit hole of discussing it and really focusing in on it instead of the pacing of, hey, this wild thing happens. Okay, let's pull back. Let's go forward. Let's pull back. It just felt very inconsistent to me. And I will say the presentation is great. It looks beautiful. But I don't think it translates as well when you actually play 10 hours of this game.
Yeah.
Right? Where it looks great when you're like booted up for the first 10, 15 minutes. But then you're like, okay, well, this is clearly like actual like scans of these handcrafted things. Like it is not an actual like handcrafted experience. Mm-hmm. So the eyes don't really move. So that is a big issue for me, where there is no, like when you see an animated movie, it's like, oh, their eyes are expressive and they're changing out. No, it is very flat. And there was a lot of moments, and I think it's a mixture because this game is a German game. So there is a little bit of like a language, you know, translation there. But that plus the eyes not moving, there were moments where like jokes were happening. I was like, it's a joke? Like, is this like, what is, like, I truly was like confused as to what they were trying to convey to me at the player.
Yeah.
So it's a weird mixture where I would recommend, I think it's on Game Pass. I'm pretty sure it is. I would recommend if you are interested in this, if you see this, try it out for sure. I just personally, it was not my type of game. And that sucks because I was very excited for this game. It looked awesome. And, you know, it visually is striking. But by the ending of it, I was like, yeah, that was whatever.
Is there much gameplay to what you're doing?
No, not at all. Yeah, not at all.
From my understanding, for like audio listeners and stuff, this is essentially like a point and click adventure.
I wouldn't even say point and click, right? Because point and click, at least in my mind, or you can correct me if I'm wrong or whatever you guys think, but like I associate that with like puzzles.
Yeah.
There's none of that. There's no puzzles. Okay. It is truly you're talking to the person, they have a conversation, and then you go over there and you talk to another person.
2D walking simulator.
Yeah, that's the best way to say that.
It kind of gives me hints of Artful Escape in that way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that one didn't hit for me, but I know the people that hit. Like, it hit so real hard for Tim. I forget if it hit for Beard or not. But, like, you know, that was one where I think if you're into the subject matter and you're into the world, then it hit for you, right? Whereas for me, I felt a bit disconnected to it. And so the fact that there wasn't much gameplay in Artful Escape outside of, like, walking to the next scene and, you know, kind of just the movement around the world, for me, I was like, okay, well, I don't think this is for me. This one's fascinating because So I picked up the demo because I was trying to figure out what my next move was for my fantasy critic. And I kept watching the trailers and I was like, this looks so good. Like the art style looks so incredible just for it's something I've not seen before.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started playing it and I was like, all right, no, I don't think this is for me. And I'm not going to pick this up on my fantasy critic because I think, it strikes me as one that is trying to do something. And if it hits for you, it's probably going to hit. But if it's not, I could easily see it not hitting for a lot of people.
It's going to be a very polarizing game. But I don't disagree with a lot of the reviews there of, you know, this is a very exciting studio. They've worked a long time on this game and you feel it. You feel it in everything that they're putting down. But I do have a little bit of like playing it. I'm like, I wonder if the slow glacial process of them developing this game hurt it in the long run because they weren't able to take turns of being like, oh, this is not working. Like maybe this moment we need to change. We need to evolve this. But hey, it is what it is. I'm happy that they made it. There are some moments in this game that I do think are genuinely incredible. Chapter 3, there is a side quest, which I don't know if it's fully a side quest. If you like have to complete it or whatever, I completed it. Incredible. Like that's what that game should have been where you are delivering mail essentially to everybody in the community that you are. So you like actually learn a lot about these characters that you would have not learned before. And it's genuinely incredible stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, 3 out of 5, I think it's okay. And if you pick it up on Game Pass, let me know what you think.
That's Harold Halibut. I'm looking it up to see if it's on Game Pass. It looks like it is. Harold Halibut is a handmade coming to Game Pass. So yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Roger Courtney, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Raj.
Let's move on to story number 3. Skybound's latest crowdfunding campaign aims to raise money to develop a new Invincible game. This is Taylor Lyles at IGN. Skybound Entertainment has announced a crowdfunding campaign to develop a new game set in the Invincible universe. Skybound said the funds will be used to develop a AAA title based on the comic book series created by Robert Kirkman. The campaign, which launched today, has already surpassed its fundraising goal of $50,000, with over $450,000 currently raised at the time of writing. The campaign is scheduled to conclude on April 30th. Quote, we're thrilled to launch this regulation crowdfunding campaign on Republic, inviting fans to join us on this new expansion and venture, CEO of Skybound Entertainment, David Alpert, said. Quote, at Skybound, we prioritize fostering meaningful connections with our audience, and this initiative allows fans to not only immerse themselves in the world of Invincible, but also to directly contribute to its expansion, end quote. This new Invincible video game is to be developed by an internal 30-person studio consisting of industry vets previously employed at studios including Activision Blizzard, EA, and Epic Games. A lot of interesting things here.
Definitely, yeah. There's been rumors of this game. I feel like people have talked to me about this in the past, and I've always been interested in like what and how it's actually going to end up happening. Because Skybound Games, a very interesting group out there, right? Like, especially over the last like decade or so, like they've published a whole bunch of really, really like big hits. They've also had a couple like smaller like misses or like everything in between. And for them to take a big swing at something like this with a triple A Invincible game, it's like, it's a little concerning because I'm like, how are you going to pull that off?
Especially when they talk about the size of the studio and the money that they're asking for. I think Kickstarter is a fascinating one that I think we should talk about in a second, but they're kickstarting with the goal of 50,000, which
is not a Kickstarter.
Oh, what is? Oh, sorry, crowdfunding. Yeah, they're crowdfunding with the goal of 50,000, which is extremely low. I think oftentimes though, crowdfunding can be used to prove a concept,
yep,
and then we'll use that as juice to get the rest of the funding we need. And so I don't want to like discount that, but then yeah, them talking about the game is being developed by an internal studio of 30 people, which again sounds way, way low for a AAA game,
for a AAA superhero game. There's expectations there that I feel like that's where most of my concern comes from, is to use the word AAA and associate it with a Invincible game. That is setting expectations of you're getting a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And even if that's not what they're trying to say, that is what people are going to hear. And that is honestly an impossible task.
Yes. And especially, I got so many questions about what this is. Because, yeah, what is the genre when we're talking about it? Because if you're telling me that this is going to be like, again, they've said nothing about it, right? So this is what you got to assume when they say AAA Invincible game. If you think about it as a third-person action game, I'm like, all right, good luck. Like, we've not gotten a good Superman game. We're going to talk about getting a good Invincible action game. Okay, well, is it going to be a Telltale-type choose-your-own-adventure kind of thing? Because I think that could be interesting, but are we then talking about it?
Something like that, didn't we, pretty recently?
With Adam Eve, yeah. And, like,
kind of different, but
is that AAA? I wish we knew more about this. I think that's the big thing for me where I'm like, all right, what the fuck is an Invincible video game look like on that scale? And then also, I guess my other question is like, why are we doing crowdfunding? Skybound, I associate with money. Maybe I'm wrong with that, right?
Yeah, but I think you're wrong with that. Okay, I think that's the thing, is like Skybound. Like, I look, obviously you hear this and it does make you go, why? But Skybound, at the end of the day, no matter how many resources they have, they aren't that big of a team. They did have pretty major layoffs not too long ago, and they are kind of like the indie guys, and it's like they're trying to make bigger dreams happen than they necessarily have the resources to be able to pull off. That's kind of always been their thing.
Yeah.
Now at a certain point you gain success, and then it's like, all right, cool, does that mean you're just successful forever, or does it still mean you need to be kind of creative about how to get these kind of dream projects funded? I think it's more in that lane. However, that gives me a lot of pause. It is concerning to think about a group that big needing any type of help to make a vision like this happen, then it might be a sign of, hey, you don't have what it is necessary.
Yeah, maybe
to
the,
make
vision
the vision
should be smaller
happen.
First.
Yeah.
Right? Like making video games is incredibly difficult. And so when we're talking about, hey, we have this property in Invincible, I'm like, well, if you want to make a video game, why not just shop it out? Right? Like, why not? I'm sure there are plenty of game studios that would want to license out an Invincible game or like work with you on making an Invincible game. Now, again, every step of video game development is hard. And so I definitely also understand the side of, oh yeah, licensing is also difficult, right? Like, who's going to pay us all this money to make Invincible? Or who are you going to pay money to make Invincible, right? Like, how are we going to make that deal work? Which I entirely understand. But then, yeah, when we come back to the idea of we're going to make an Invincible video game, I would prefer, like, hey, this is what our vision is. It's small. It is either choose your own adventure or some kind of specific genre thing. We're not going to go for... We're not going to use the words AAA to describe it, because that comes with the expectation of third person action. You're going off on this 20-hour quest cut type thing. I read through the details of who's working on it or how many people are working on it, and I'm like, this doesn't sound like it's going to be that or can be that. And so I just got a lot of questions with it. I hope it comes together well, because I want there to be a dope ass Invincible video game. I think that'd be sick as fuck.
Let me read from the actual site here. This is from the republic.com page, which is where they're crowdfunding this. So like you were saying, like they were trying to get 500k or 50k. They're at 441k as of right now,
which is still not a lot of money for a triple A game.
Exactly. Going through some of the things here, it seems like Skybound previously raised 18 million on Republic from about 6,000 people for something. So here's the problem that they're spelling out. Most crowdfunding video games are centered around indie games, and retail investors rarely have the opportunity to get in on the ground floor of AAA game publishers. Skybound's developing a highly produced, high-octane bloodbath that is anything but indie.
Okay, so they're going for it.
Our bona fide global hit IP, Invincible, is at the center, and we've handpicked our own team consisting of more than 30 gaming industry veterans to make it happen. We've successfully raised $18 million from everyday investors and fans via Republic and Cedars, and we're inviting you to join us once again. There we go. And then the solution is by developing this game in-house. Our complete control of our team of franchise stakeholders and Robert Kirkman, the Invincible IP creator, we're creating a highly coveted game that is guaranteed to have fans of the comic, the global hit TV show, and serious gamers alike wholly captivated by this first of its kind Invincible experience. Plus, by creating this project in-house, we will reap the benefits of being the IP rights owner, developer, and publisher, providing increased value to our stakeholders. You've never seen a game like this from Skybound before. And then it like keeps going.
So they're going.
On.
They're going for it.
Yeah.
And based on that, it sounds like they got the money. Them talking about the $18 million. Okay, that makes way more sense than the $50,000 that they're asking for. I'm still very skeptical in terms of like where we're at with the video game industry right now. Where like the conversations we've had in terms of, man, video game layoffs are happening left and right. We have so many people starting up new studios. We've seen quite a few of those new studios now come out, try to make it happen, not make it happen. I think we're still waiting for a bit more of the success stories out of that. They're starting with a team here of around 30 plus people. For this, I think obviously you're going to hire up, right? Like, I think you're going to hopefully be able to get those numbers up to maybe like 100 or a couple hundred people if you're talking about a high octane, like bloody ass Invincible game. I want that to happen. I think that'd be dope as hell. That is everything I would ask for out of an Invincible thing. But man, that's a tall order.
It is.
Going from 0 to 100 like that.
You know, Invincible is a wild IP because the comic books are amazing. We've talked about them for a decade here at Kind of Funny of how amazing they are. Now the show's out and everybody that's given the show a chance absolutely loves it. It's doing very well for Amazon. And it is a brand now that people know. And it worked because the quality was there. It's good. So guess what? People like good things. They want to support good things. And I can't believe we live in a world where Omni-Man is in Mortal Kombat. But he is, because of the popularity of Invincible to a certain group of people. And I think the Venn diagram of gamers and people that like Invincible, it's like, all right, it's really, really kind of like tailor-made for us to enjoy the story of Invincible and like the meta-ness of it, but also just the sheer quality of it all. So it is interesting to apply that to a game because it does make sense. But again, my biggest fear is it makes sense to make a Spider-Man game. And it took so many to bad Spider-Man games to eventually get some of the bangers that we did get, you know?
Yeah.
And not only did it take time, it took the backing of PlayStation, you know? So there is the thing to bring into about IP, though. Now, on one hand, it's not Spider-Man. It's Invincible. It doesn't need to hit on that level necessarily. And also, they don't need to pay any of the licensing rights for it. So there's some major pros for them because they have ownership of the IP that already has a built-in goodwill and built-in marketing because people want more Invincible right now. And somehow, it's not the exact same people, but there are some of the people related, Robert Kirkman being one of them, they have done the impossible, which is adapt Invincible from comic to a different medium successfully. Mm-hmm. They did it. We're getting a multi-season, hour-long animated show that's as good as Invincible is. They've done the impossible before, so I don't want to write them off.
Yeah.
But I will say, video games are different, and video this games sounds are hard, scary.
And we've not gotten a good Superman-style game, which is like the closest comparison I can make to Invincible and like his powers as a character. That said, what if you're not playing as Invincible? Is there somebody else in that universe that you could play as? Because, I mean, the article leads off here, right? We're getting a new game. They're developing a game set in the Invincible universe. Is there a different character that, one, you could put on the box and would actually sell, but then also would make for a good video game?
No.
No?
That's just not how this works. I mean, there are characters that'd be fun to play and stuff, but, like, that You don't do this to market with a side thing. You market with Invincible and you make it Invincible. Now, here's the thing, Bless. Mm-hmm. What if this wasn't a Spider-Man? Mm-hmm. What if this was a Dragon Ball Kakarot type situation or a Tenkaichi like thing? Maybe not so much a fighting game, but like more, hey, we're giving you the story, but it's not necessarily like a more open zone, open world, whatever, 3D, third person action game. It might be more of like a
contained you're in arenas.
More linear type thing.
Do people want that?
I don't know.
Because like as much as I like Dragon Ball Kakarot is cool for a lot of reasons, it's not the best video game. I even look at Tenkaichi and like I love Tenkaichi, but that's more of a fighting game. And I think like if you told me that you're making an Invincible fighting game in that style, I'd be for it. I'd be like, okay, well, cool. But most people wouldn't.
So, but check this out. What if it was a single player fighting game, right? Where it's like it's based
going
around
through these big battles.
Yeah, and like it's because what I do think that there is a huge market out there of people that are watching the show and falling in love with it and are so interested in knowing what happens and wanting to read the comic, but they don't want to read.
Yeah.
They don't want to pick up a comic book and they're not going to, but they would be willing to play through a game that tells the story of Invincible, like whether it's the entire story or it is like just further than the show is. Give them the major battles, give them some of the major plot points, and then maybe a lot of it is more of a Dragon Ball type fighting game, like one-on-one thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's also other gameplay elements that are a bit more like, and now we go to school.
Now it's Persona.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you pitch it like that, you might get me in. I'd be interested in it. But like the stuff you're describing is stuff that I feel like hasn't been done before like that with that kind of IP, right? I feel like Dragon Ball and with like anime games, those are an entirely different thing where the bar is so much lower than Invincible because we've gotten so many of these anime games that we know what we're getting, right? Like Dragon Ball Z Tenkaichi, I don't know if that's a critical hit more of as opposed to like more so of a fan hit, right? Like fans really fuck with Dragon Ball Tenkaichi. I don't know if like that got the best reviews and like the fighting game community really rocks with it like that. And I would say the same thing for like Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm and stuff like that, right? Like they're shoveling that out to the fans because they know it's going to get the sales. We're going to play it. I think when you're talking about an Invincible video game, people want something that's like solid. People want something that's like fucking good. But I'm here for it. Like I'm here for the ideas too. Like I'm very fascinated to see what that original trailer or what that first trailer is going to look like.
Yeah.
Because that I can't imagine in my head what that is. But hey, convince me.
Yep.
Story number four: Nintendo won't be attending Gamescom 2024. This is Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. Nintendo has reportedly confirmed that it won't be attending Gamescom 2024 in a statement issued to German publication Games Workshop. A spokesperson for the company said it would not be an exhibitor at this summer's event. VGC has contacted Nintendo for confirmation and additional comment. Little update there.
Labor Day says you're right, Bless. Us Naruto fans don't want something good.
Am I wrong?
That's hilarious.
Have fun playing Boruto Cross Naruto Ultimate Ninja Connections or whatever the fuck.
Nintendo won't be attending Gamescom. Not a surprise, necessarily. Nintendo's just so fucking weird, man. They always have been, and they always will be. How weird they are will change over time, but they'll be weird no matter what happens. I feel like Gamescom hasn't typically been their beat anyways, and they tend to, around that time, show up at PAX East in a small way, but they're there. And I feel like that kind of might be their kind of fall plans.
They weren't, like, at Gamescom.
Sorry, PAX West.
But, like, where this last Gamescom, wasn't that where people got their hands on the Nintendo, like, the next Nintendo console?
I mean, that's the reports, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think Nintendo was there, like,
on the show floor,
kind of.
They weren't attending Gamescom. I feel like Nintendo reps will still be at Gamescom, but
I don't think they have
a booth. I don't think that they're showing things off. Whereas, I feel like they're going to double down on what they did last year, with PAX East Prime. West Prime. What do they call it nowadays? Is it
the one on the West is PAX West,
PAX
or the
West.
One in Seattle is PAX West?
Nintendo is around there. So I feel like that is a big boon for them. And they will probably, I mean, they haven't announced it yet, but I don't think it's too late to announce a follow-up to Nintendo Live that they did last year, because that seemed like a big success. So I kind of imagine that's going to be their kind of like the thing that they use their resources on in the fall area, because we're not expecting too many big games, if any. So
we'll see. Story number five. Fallout games see Steam players counts more than triple following the TV show's release. This is Chris Golian at Video Games Chronicle. Numerous games in the Fallout series have seen their player counts dramatically rise following the release of the Fallout TV show. The show, which is exclusive to Amazon Prime Video, was released in full on April 12th to widespread critical acclaim, with a current Rotten Tomatoes rating of 94% and an audience score of 88%. As an apparent result of the show's success, SteamDB points out that a number of Fallout games have enjoyed a large increase in concurrent player counts on Steam following its release. While SteamDB's post on X suggested games have been more than doubling their concurrent player counts, numbers have continued to rise, and now some Fallout games are seeing more than triple their usual numbers. The biggest leap has been enjoyed by Fallout 4, which has been regularly hitting weekend peaks of around 20,000 to 24,000 for the past 6 months, but saw a peak of 83,491 on Sunday, more than tripling its normal player count. Fallout 76 also saw a large jump in numbers, shooting from a three-month best of around 13,000 players to 39,455 on Sunday, breaking its all-time peak concurrent player count. Even older games saw notable increases, with Fallout New Vegas rising from concurrent averages of around 5,000 to 19,505 on Sunday, and Fallout 3 Game of the Year Edition going from around 1,000 to a peak of 6,731.
Plus, it's so weird. Like, this has happened before.
Yeah.
But it's always weird when a new story is about me.
Yeah.
Because on Sunday,
no,
there were 19,505 people playing Fallout New Vegas on Steam. And I was one of them.
No, you're lying.
I was
one of them.
Now, here's the thing. Let's just be real about this. Did I just buy it because I had my Steam Deck and we were watching Fallout? I was like, all right, I know I'm not actually going to get into this, but I mean, it was $2.50.
Yeah, I mean,
it was $2.
I was looking at the sales this morning too, and I was like, I already own these games on consoles. I don't need them on Steam also, but also, what if I just happen to have them?
And I booted
it
up.
It's so nice to have them on the deck, bless.
I was so concerned because when the game booted up, it was giving me not error messages, but it was just pop. There were pop-ups, bless. Yeah. And they were popping up, and I'm like, this ain't going to work. This ain't going to work at all. I started to say, oh, your buttons aren't going to work. You need to touch the screen. I was like, oh, this is about to be fucked.
So
touch the screen.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm in. Once I'm in the menu, I was like, oh, yeah, everything just works. And I started the game, and it was just playing on the deck, and it was beautiful.
That's awesome.
Like, holy shit.
The Fallout games are weird, because I remember when they announced last week with the Fallout 4, like, next-gen stuff, they're like, oh, Fallout 4 is going to be playable on deck. It's like, well, it is playable. The only weird thing is entering in your name. Like, that's the only, like, weirdness when it comes to playing on the deck. But besides that, like...
So, funny thing is, I also was playing New Vegas on Sunday through Xbox Cloud Gaming. Because I started a save a while ago on my Xbox. And I was like, oh, I would love to play this on Steam Deck. And then I remembered you can play Cloud on Steam Deck. So I booted it up. And Kevin helped me out with my home Wi-Fi situation. Because my Wi-Fi's always sucked, which is why I don't do a lot of cloud or streaming stuff. But he gave me his Google Home or his Google Wi-Fi thing. So now my Wi-Fi is way better. And started playing New Vegas on cloud. Was fucking great.
Hell yeah.
Worked seamlessly. And like, I didn't play that much because right now I'm stuck in like a dungeon, and I gotta defeat these two super mutants, and they're really strong, and they keep killing me, and I don't know what to do. But like, it worked, and I think I want to play more Fallout.
Awesome.
And
I mean, hey, that's the thing, you know, like reverse engineering this a bit. Like, we were just talking about the Invincible potential game. I think that because of the show's success and the overlap with gamers, I do think it's going to have kind of the reverse thing for a AAA Invincible game. Like, it has a leg up, and we are now seeing definitive proof. Like, there is no question that if you put out a good product, people will get interested in the IP. And it's been working now countless times with The Witcher, with Mario, with Last of Us, with Fallout. When you put out good movies or TV shows based on games, people are going to show up and find interest in the games, whether it is brand new audience playing for the first time or people returning that are like, hey, I need to, I'm getting the itch to live in this world. Or people like me that are lifelong gamers that somehow have missed out on an entire franchise.
Yeah.
And it's like very cool to me. I mean, watching the show has been fantastic because I feel like I finally get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally get it.
I'm so happy that both you and then like so many new people that are jumping into Fallout can get to experience the universe of Fallout.
It's awesome.
It's the best part. Right? Like, playing the games, I don't think Fallout is your kind of video game, Tim, but like, I think the universe is your shit, right? Like, it's so weird, it's so wacky, but there's so many cool, like, pieces of, like, iconography and cool, like, you know, design things, and like the Pip-Boy is a thing, and like the fucking the stim packs getting in, like the ghouls and all this shit. It's all fucking dope. And yeah, like, I'm so glad that there's another avenue for people that might not be a big open world, especially if you want to play like a fucking 2008 RPG in Fallout 3.
Yeah.
I'm glad that there's a way for people to get into it. And also, that's my last thing here, is justice for Fallout 3. Because I get it, right? Fallout 4 is the most modern single-player one. Fallout 76 is the latest one to come out. New Vegas is like the fan favorite when you talk about it. Don't sleep on Fallout 3. I don't like that Fallout 3 is way below when you're talking about these list of numbers. Play Fallout 3. Fallout 3 is fucking amazing. All right?
Nah, but there's like a more modern version. It's called Fallout 4.
Fallout 3 is fucking amazing. I don't give a fuck about Fallout 4, even though I like Fallout 4 a lot. But play Fallout 3 also.
The Fallout Episode 2 title screen, I'm not going to spoil it. It was fucking fire.
Oh, dude.
So wait. Good. Yeah.
Just wait. Story number 6. Star Wars Outlaws Jabba the Hutt mission is locked behind a season pass. This is Ryan Dinsdale at IGN. Ubisoft has already come under fire for a single-player game, Star Wars Outlaws, having a season pass, but fans are expressing frustration once again, noticing its highly anticipated Jabba the Hutt mission is locked behind it. As reported by Spanish outlet Aria Ugones, Ubisoft's website outlining the contents of the season pass, an optional extra to the $70 standard game, so far only available through its $109.99 gold edition and even more expensive $130 ultimate edition, reveals it includes access to the Jabba's Gambit mission at launch. Quote, play the exclusive Jabba's Gambit mission at launch, the season pass explainer reads. Just as Kay is putting together a crew for the Canto Bite heist, she receives a job from Jabba the Hutt himself. Turns out that ND5 owes Jabba a debt from years ago, and he has come to collect, end quote. It's unclear how much of the Jabba the Hutt content will be locked behind the season pass, but Ubisoft has said in the past players can work for and even betray Jabba as the head of one of Star Wars Outlaws' criminal factions. It's now unclear whether this content comes at a premium or if it's part of the standard game. The mission description very much sounds like the introduction to working for Jabba. However, and at the very least, this confirms $70 won't give players access to all of Star Wars Outlaws. IGN has asked Ubisoft for clarification and comment. About to pay more money to play as Jabba, Tim? Or something, not play as Jabba, but I guess play the Jabba content? Fight Jabba the Hutt?
No, not on purpose. You know what I mean? Unless the game is good, and then I want more, and then I will. This is troublesome because I don't think that in theory that this is bad. Like, hey, we have a game. If you pay more, you'll get more of the game. I just feel like it's a little backwards right now. And for a single player game, it's just not. We still haven't cracked the code on the right way to keep single player games going in a way that people are happy about. And I feel like the closest we've gotten is to just not, and then just make a smaller sequel, Spider-Man to Miles Morales. Let's just do more of that type of thing. Because this just feels, I mean, obviously it's bad PR. No matter what way you shake it. Like, you put this out there, this is a bad news story. We'll get the details as they officially come out, maybe some type of retraction or change up or whatever. But it is sad that this is just the norm, that we expect bullshit like this to happen. And, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
This reeks of games just, again, even just single player open games just needing to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's just like, why are we doing this? And the answer is, there's a lot of money. We just talked last week extensively about Assassin's Creed and this game and their place in Ubisoft's portfolio. And looking at Assassin's Creed Valhalla, it's a fucking mega hit. Why? A ton of reasons. But it being absolutely huge with a lot of leverage for monetization, I don't think is not the reason.
Yeah, I think for me it comes down to, does this content feel like, when I play through the main game, am I feeling like I'm missing out on something here? Do I finish it and go, man, where's Jabba the Hutt? Like, you know, do I play it and I feel like something was ripped out, or does it feel like just added on content? And also, should you do a DLC add-on content at release of the game with like the ultimate edition, or do you make it part, like, do you announce it and drop it 6 months later, right? Like, it's that weird thing of, well, if they're gonna do it anyway, then who cares about when they do it? You know, I'm like, I get both sides of it almost, where I get people reading that and being like, oh shit, okay, so I'm not getting the full thing, but also I don't know, man. We get DLC all the time, so I don't really care that much.
Yeah,
I'm just not going to play the Jabba the Hutt stuff, probably.
My only thing, because, yeah, like, I'm not inherently against this, is, like, I'm pausing here in this trailer because Jabba's a part of the story trailer, and, like,
yeah.
Even in the report that you read, like, it's unclear if, like, if this scene is part of the DLC or not, or if it's part of the main like story and there's just like a mission that's not available.
There's no way this isn't part of the
mission. That's a problem. I agree with that. Like, the fact that he's in the story trailer.
If that's the case and like this scene isn't part of the main game and like that story content is part of DLC, then I think it's weird and it's a problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree with that.
But if this is... if it's just one mission and Jabba's still in the game, like, I don't know. It's the way that it's presented in the trailer that makes it seem like it's the game and part of the main story. But then if it's not, again, it's a whole mess.
Yeah.
I honestly, and like, let's please everyone hold me to this. There's no way that this isn't in the main game. That's going to be such a fucking problem for them if it's not. And I just don't see that happening. Like, I feel like this right now is a story that is like, you know, people upset because people don't like paying more than $70 goddamn for a video game.
Yeah.
And to be clear, that's like that case. If that's the scenario, that's like the only reason like why I would be like,
I agree with that.
Sucks,
if Jabba wasn't in the trailer.
Yes.
And they just happen to have Jabba DLC. I'm like, all right, cool. I don't give a fuck about Jabba. Like, I'm not going to play the DLC. But yeah, him being in the story trailer, if he doesn't show up in any scene and only is through extra paid content, then I think that's a problem and you shouldn't do that.
Yep.
But Tim? Jabba? Oh, man, that's a big character.
He's so big.
But if I wanted something smaller, there you go. Say the tiniest news I need to know about. Where would I go?
You go to our last story, the Wii News Channel, where we cover all the small news items that you need to know about.
Now it's time. Story number 7. That's right. It's Wii News. This first one comes from VGC. An unofficial fan-made launcher for Lawbreakers has made the game playable again for the first time in 6 years. I saw Cliffy B tweeting about it. So there you go for your Lawbreakers fan out there. Content Warning has now sold 1 million copies on top of the 6.6 million players that got the game for free.
What a world we live in, look, man. At that.
Good for y'all.
Good for y'all.
Did you get to play Content Warning?
No.
I have not played it
not
either.
Not yet. I feel like me and you are going to be on the next squad at some point.
I want to try it because seeing it played and hearing it described, I'm like, this doesn't sound like my kind of thing. I'm not like, I don't jump on the games that are like the streamer games, you know what I mean? Like the only ups of the world and stuff like that. I'm like, that's not really my jam. But I don't know, a lot of people have a lot of good things to say about this Content Warning video game, so yeah, try it out. Surmount has gone gold and will release early on May 2nd on PC and Switch.
Looks rad.
Looks really cool. One Piece Odyssey Deluxe Edition is coming to Switch on July 6th. And then the cast for Aerial Knights We Never Yield has been announced. This is tweeted by Aerial Knight on Twitter. He says, today I get to talk about the amazing voice cast that I put together for We Never Yield, which includes Blessing Jr. as the voice of Wally, Black Crystal as the voice of Karmic, and Belle Rusop Vio as the voice of Lone.
Which not every day that we get to cover news that's about us.
Oh, shit, that's me.
That's you, Bless. Cool. Hey, what's up, everybody? Bless is a voice in a goddamn video game.
I get the voice. It's really cool because I played... thank you so much for the smoke, Barrett. I played the original Aerial Knights Never Yield. I really like that game, right? It's a runner, 2D runner type game. Played it. Really liked the style. Really liked the music. Really just liked the game in general. Platinum did also. And was really, surprised and honored that Aerial Knight would hit me up for the sequel and be like, yo, be part of the main cast, like the lead cast. And so
freaking
shout
cool,
out to Aerial
man.
Knight. Look forward to We Never Yield. And yeah, it's like my first lead role in a game, lead voice acting role.
Hell yeah, dude.
Let's fucking go. And that's it for Wii News. Before we get out of here, let's check out a few super chats here. Mando Valencia says, what about PS3 native compatibility? We got to give up the dream. I think they're talking about the PS5 Pro. Yeah. That's not going to happen.
No.
Optimus Prime says, I wish we could go back to a gen being every 7 years. These mid-gen refreshes take away from the proper new consoles and have small incremental changes. I don't think anything's changed, though. We still get the new consoles every 7 years.
Yeah, I honestly just think games have changed. Like, it's not taking anything away. I feel like at the end of the day, the games are not going to ever be made on a 7-year console cycle now where we get to see all the, like, fancy stuff that's next-gen. Cross-gen is the norm, and I feel like it's going to forever be the norm. I don't think we're ever going to get another console ever where it's like, oh, these games that are coming out for it are only playable on that console.
Yeah.
Oh, never sure. Again.
Yeah, I think we've reached the point where that's not going to happen. My thing is I'm okay with it. I see people complaining online all the time about how, oh, but there's only like 3 real PS5 exclusives. And I'm like, yeah, but like, you know, God of War Ragnarok still probably looks more next gen than
it does.
Any of the other ones,
yeah,
right?
And also, who cares? It's like, that's the thing is like, when I think about it, it's like, did I love my PS5? Mm-hmm. I've had so many amazing experiences on my PS5. Could I have had some of those amazing experiences on my PS4? Sure. But I had them better on the PS5.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with it, you know?
And I still don't think much, outside of like more of the cross-generational releases, I don't think much has changed in terms of when we're getting consoles. Because what? PS3 to PS4 was what, like 8 years? 7 to 8 years around that? PS4 to PS5, that was from 2013 to 2020. That's 7 years, right? Like, I imagine by the time we get to the next PlayStation, it'll be 2027 or 2028. Like, I think 7 to 8 years is the cadence, and it's been like that forever. And I don't think mid-gen consoles are changing that up.
I don't think it changes it up. I just think it makes them less exciting, because then all the new fancy tech and bells and whistles aren't there. And yeah, the more incremental you are, the less exciting the next increment
that's
is.
That's a good thing, but, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm with
yeah,
that.
Like the fact that we get to taste that earlier.
Totally.
Like, let me taste it. Let me taste the PSSR. I don't like that. Actually, I didn't like saying that out loud. Taste the PSSR, yuck. Guitar Hero Arrow says, question for Tim.
You want to start calling it Pusser?
No. Oh, they got to change it now. Fuck. Because it's either Pusser or it's Pisser. Neither of those is good.
It's not.
Passer? Easter? Yeah, I'm no, none of these are good. Oh, fuck. Guitar Hero Arrow writes in and says, question for Tim. Any chance of a Rebirth spoiler cast or finally a 16 spoiler cast following the DLC this week?
No plans as of this moment to officially do it.
I just like the idea of you never making plans so we can get so much money off of these super chats. Because every
it's
day,
not the goal.
Every
it's
day they're riding in. But like, listen, if you want to give us $5 every day,
you're giving
to
away
ask,
the game, bro.
If you want to give us $5 every day to ask, you know, God. That's all I'm saying. And that's it for YouTube super chats. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe.
We got one here from Jordan. Saying a correction on the Skybound stuff, they're not asking for 50K to make the game. Like, that's not their ultimate goal. They have a minimum goal of 50K and a maximum goal of 5 million. You can see this deal in terms on the Republic page. So that's a bit more.
But like, even when I said that, right? Like, I knew that, but still, like, I guess this is me just not understanding crowdfunding. Because even 50K is a goal. I'm like, okay, well, if you hit the 50K, that's the you're still committing to making this thing regardless, right? And so you're just gonna make it with the 50K.
I mean, I imagine it's
here in the context of they already have money and all this shit makes it make more sense.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see what it looks like. But it is the 5 million, I think, as their actual goal there.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, cool.
It makes sense.
That adds up a bit more.
That's a very large window between two numbers. I guess that's the thing I don't understand about crowdfunding is like, all right, we're looking for a minimum of 50K, but a maximum of $5 million?
I mean, I think it's more just like
two different amounts of money.
It's an attempt at buy-in, right? It's like when you look at that crowdfunding page, like the majority of the words on it are kind of like, look how cool we are. Look how valuable this could be. Mm-hmm. And I feel like showing that value, the more you could show that, it's just going to get even more investors interested in supporting even more. So I feel like that's the stage we're in, where I imagine that a lot of this money that they're talking about here, whether it was 50 or 5 million, and anything in between, plus what they already have otherwise, is going to go towards some level of demo, you know, or trailer, sure, or like some, the vertical slice we'll eventually see when this game is officially announced.
Yeah.
After a full CG trailer.
I don't know. It's just, I imagine myself walking to the office one day and being like, hey, y'all, like, I really got to buy a new car. I told my current car, if y'all can give me anywhere between, I don't know, man, $50 and let's say, I don't know, $50,000, I can make this happen. I feel like all y'all would be like, that's a really wide margin. Like, what the fuck are you going to do with $50 for a car? It's like, oh, trust me, I can get the car with $50. But hey, if y'all want to give me $50,000, I guess I can just get a better car in that case.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy a fucking toy car with that $50, I guess. I got to learn about crowdfunding. I'm going to do that. I'm going to watch some YouTube videos. Get educated. Tim, that's it for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday, we run you through the nerdy news you need to know about live on YouTube, Twitch, and on podcast services around the globe. If you love what we do, support us with the Kind of Funny membership on Patreon or YouTube to get all of our shows ad-free, watch us recording them live, and get a daily exclusive show. Until next time, Game Daily.